Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Coach Mack, Dave McGinnis, Titans Radio game day analyst in studio with us as we kick off the hour. Coach Mack, great to see you.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me in. It's great to be here. Great to be back. Not only with you guys, but I mean, it's training camp. It's time to start ball. Let me piggyback off of Paul.
Let's start right there.
You're spot on with that, Paul. I mean, I've been involved in these types of situations at all different levels in my 30 plus years coaching in this league. It will get resolved, but I mean, your analysis of it is spot on. I mean, both sides are going to have to make a decision. Something will be done. There will be something done, but right now it's a little bit of a standoff.
Can you put Marcus Mariota on the field against Green Bay as the preseason
opener?
Green
Bay, yeah.
Can you put him on the field for two series with Dennis Kelly and Kevin Pamphile protecting his edges?
To me, it depends on what you are going to do offensively. I mean, if you're going to just hand the football off, yes, you can. And you can control a lot of what you do, especially in the preseason, you know, just by what you do. So to answer your question now, would you want to go into a full game plan like that, you know, with somebody that is also full game planning you? You've also got to remember that Green Bay won't be, you know, full bore game planning either. It is the first preseason game. But that is a point.
Well, they normally don't play Aaron Rodgers in that first preseason game. But for the Titans, they want to play Mariota with this new offense, right?
Well,
they need to get him some reps.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Quit
talking over you. But that is
please
the,
do.
No, I won't. But that is what they need. He needs time on this because this offense, and of course this offense is why we had the change. This offense is why we're sitting where we are right now. This offense, I mean, just from my experience with it, which goes back quite a ways, you know, starting with Mike Shanahan in Denver having to draw up defensive game plans against this is very well suited for this quarterback, but it takes some time and it takes reps. You can't manufacture experience, and the experience comes against people that, an uncommon opponent.
First off, I just want to say, hearing your voice, it sounds like football season, and that just warms my damn heart, just hearing it. So thank you for joining us in here today.
Chad, that's the first time anybody has ever said to me, Coach Mack, you warm my heart.
Yeah, you really do.
Now, that makes, I mean,
I feel special over here now, hearing
that
voice.
You're still waiting on a woman to say it.
Yeah. I mean, that's good. That was my point. It's not that
that's not how you envision someone saying that to you.
No, it is, Chad. And again, I've got mad respect for you, but thank you.
Yeah, it is
football
season.
It's
the literal sound of football season with Coach Mack's voice.
Thanks.
In terms of practice, preparation, and in camp, as you get ready for the season, we know with the new offense, and we were just talking about this, quarterback, receiver, running back, obviously very important. In terms of offensive line play, if we're looking at an offensive tackle, and a guy with the experience of Taylor Lewan, also it's not a rookie or someone like that, but how important are these reps in that new offense for the offensive lineman?
Any reps are important. Any reps are important, and especially when you're putting in a new system because, you know, this offense, guys, runs through the running game. This offense starts, you know, through the running game. And the running game, you know, dictates a lot of what goes on with this because this offense, when it is running on all gears, I mean, when it's gin rummy going, and again, I've defensed this thing for a lot of years, is they put you in a run-pass conflict defensively at the second and third levels so much because of the way the play action comes off of the run game. And it's not only a drop-back seven-step play action. I'm talking about an outside zone stretch play action that has multiple, you know, reads for the quarterback. It's got, combination blocks with the offensive lineman that they have to use. And this offense with the deceptions, and the deceptions come off of not so much by the fact that, it's trick plays. It's everything looks the same coming off of this thing. And the screen game is a huge part of this offense, guys, and various screens. You've got all kind of front side, backside screens. You've got what we call dodge screens where they set it up to start outside, then it breaks back inside. You've got what they call slide screens, roll screens. There's a lot that comes off of this that the offensive line is involved in. So my answer to your question is, yes, it's important.
Well, and you mentioned, you know, running play action off an outside zone stretch play, and I can't help but think you better have offensive tackles who are doing their job if you're going to roll out that way and run a play action pass. And that's, I mean, that's going to be imperative to run this offense.
Well, when you
if you're running play action like that.
I talked over you too, Chad.
Oh, you're fine. No, go ahead. So you, anytime you want to talk over any of us, go ahead. No, we give you full permission.
No, I won't do that. I don't do that. The thing about it is, in the outside zone stretch, the offensive tackles blocks are called the money blocks because they are one-on-one. Those guys are by themselves. Your combo blocks are inside, and then the back has to make a decision. You know, once you start running, let's talk run-pass option a little bit. Quarterback's the guy that's reading the second level. He's reading the second level. He can never be wrong handing it off. Then it's up to the back with his footwork to be able to set the second level defenders as far as whether he wants to press the front side hole and stay there, whether he wants to bang it down inside the guards, or whether he wants to bend it back. You know, that's all on the back. But they tell the quarterbacks, you know, a lot in these RPO stuff, you can't be wrong handing it off. Now, you have to have a reason that you want to hand it, but there's always, you know, people get the wrong impression that with an RPO, everything is front side. That's not true. There's always a complementary play set up to the backside of an RPO, because what you're trying to do is get the second level of defense to overcommit to the play action one way or the other. And then you either have a bubble screen on the backside, you either have double slant flats on the backside, you either have something coming from the front side to the backside. It's all about voiding zones and outnumbering the defensive players. But it starts with the quarterback being able to read what goes on. But the tackles blocks, those are the money blocks because they're singled up.
Normally, is the quarterback reading the weak side linebacker in the RPO?
It depends on the play. You know, there's certain plays, and people have taken this to all different levels. I mean, when Chip Kelly first started this, he even started in Philadelphia, guys reading the three technique. You know, they would teach him to read the three technique with some setups with how you do. But to simplify it, to answer your question, basically, yes, because that's the guy that's going to decide where your numbers count is. When you're trying to split a defense, when you're trying to divide a defense, if you'll draw the number right down in the center and start counting defenders on each side of the box, that's what they are looking for. And that's why defensively, when you're defending somebody that does the RPO, your balancing act is your safety. Where you put your safety is important because, you know, and it depends on where the back is set, because a lot of times if you offset the back
to
the
deeper safety.
Well, it's deeper, and it's also where you put him, Paul, as far as in relation to where the center is.
Right, but you're saying where the deeper safety is.
Where the deeper safety is, because, and I'm talking about when you set up in a seven-man box look so that you can also bogey, and when I talk about bogeys, I'm talking about disguising on defense so that they don't get a pre-snap read when they come up and sit down and look at you. It's real easy for them to look at a middle-of-the-field closed defense, and when I say middle-of-the-field closed, I'm talking about a single high safety sitting back there with an eight-man box, however you want to do it, whether it's an over and under front and wherever you put the backers, that's easy for them to read. But once you give them that seven-man box look with where you can play with it, but it depends on where you put the safety, because, and a lot of people will, if the back is offset weak in a true shotgun look with an RPO, they'll offset the safety over there to the strong side guard to give him a pre-snap false look. Okay, if he's set to the strong side. So there's a lot of games being played with that. I don't want to get too deep into it, but we're talking ball.
The story last week about Jeremy Pruitt and Mark Richt and the former Georgia players upset with Jeremy Pruitt about his lack of respect for the head coach and Mark Richt, and saying they don't think that he's going to be a great head coach at Tennessee because he showed a lack of respect to the head coach. It immediately, to me, raised the question of how would a head coach allow such a level of disrespect? He could fire the guy at any point if he wanted to. What do you think when you hear a story like that about disrespect between coaches?
Well, first of all, I mean, I wasn't there.
So right.
I mean, a lot of that stuff. I mean, when did this take place? Did it take place during the
2014 and 2015?
I'm talking about the stories that came out.
Oh, they came out after the fact from guys who weren't there, that were hearing it secondhand from people that were there.
Okay, so context. Anyway. Yeah. Look, let me tell you, you three guys sitting in here and everybody else that's listening, if I took to heart everything that had been said disparagingly to me in some real, real terms that a lot of us can understand that we can't say on the radio during my 40 years on the sideline between coaches, that I would be in therapy right now rather than sitting here with you three guys talking. Now, at the same time, when I was a head coach, I probably put some guys in therapy too, players and coaches. So to me, anything that happens during, I mean, that is part of the business. Now, to me, disrespect covers a whole broad base, but I find it, I mean, I don't put much stock in any of that, Chad, just to say, because I can tell you guys stories off the air. I just told you one that, I mean, during ball games, it is very heated. I mean, and as you guys well know, there's a 10-minute cooling off period after every ball game before anybody ever comes back in the locker room for a lot of reasons. And then some people still can't get their emotions. I mean, I've heard things said between coaches on sidelines, on the headsets, in the office during the week, getting game plans ready. And then guess what? Once you get ready to go, hey, let's go win a ball game. I mean, it's a very intense business. It's a very right now business. You cannot have real thin skin in this business in a lot of areas, and that's one of them.
Dave McGinnis in studio with us. Coach, speaking of business, player holdouts happen all the time. As a coach, as the head coach, when you're not GM and head coach like a Bill Belichick, what is that like? Managing what you have on the field versus what you hope joins your team shortly?
Well, that's a very great question. It's a very topical question, and it's a real question that happens a lot in this league. I mean, it really does, because there is a business side to this game, and then there is the game itself. As a head coach, I have been there. I mean, I've been through this. What you have to do, you have to be able to compartmentalize, you know, what you can control and what you cannot control. Because you can't get involved in that other side of it. What, you know, you have to be able to stay, you know, within your lane, coach the guys that you have. Of course, it's a concern to you because you are hired to coach the football team. You're hired to coach the entire football team. And it's hard to put your football team together scheme-wise, attitude-wise, you know, vibe-wise, just getting ready without everybody there. But at the same time, you cannot let that distract you from the other 85 or 86 players that you have that have to get ready. And again, once you get into this business, we all are in this business. Fans are in this business. They have to understand it is part of it. Does anybody like it? I'm not sure anybody likes it, but it's part of it. But things will get resolved. They always do.
Luan, obviously a major tone setter. If you spend time without your maybe biggest offensive tone setter for a while as you're forming identity at the beginning, how much different is that maybe than losing a guy whose personality isn't a key thing, but who's a very good player?
Oh, that's a great point. I mean, that's a good point. And everyone is, you know, it is different. And as you said, I mean, he is a guy that sets a tone, that's got an attitude. But the thing about it is they know what he is. They know what he does. This is the business side of it. But as you said, all things being equal, you want him there for the whole time.
Dave McGinnis with us on the Midday 180. We're served up by Wendy's. Question for you on planning for camp as a head coach. How much time goes into being spent putting together, coming up with the training camp schedule, how you want to allocate time to certain areas, not just on the practice field, because that's, you have a specific set of time that you can use per day. It used to be two-a-days, and we know how that turned out with the CBA. But also individual meetings, special teams, lunch. Tell us about how many different sets of schedules you come up with before you finalize what you wanted
to
do.
It all starts, and I promise you this, when Mike Vrabel got this job, during his interview, he had some of those things already set out. I interviewed for three jobs in the National Football League, okay, three head jobs. You know, 6, 7, 8-hour processes, all of them. You always have a book ready. You have something ready to show. Now, you can't exactly say, but you need to show what your plans are. You know, at the time, you know, that I interviewed, you know, one place where they want to know how many days you're going to be in pads, how many days are you not. These were 2-a-day practices. You have a lot of that template already done. Once you do get the job, then you start, you have that template, and as soon as you get your staff together, then you start working on that too. And there's much more that goes into it, just as you said, Jonathan, other than most coaches will have that template at least through the first preseason game, because what you want to do is then you need to adjust some of your things depending on how many people you have, who's healthy, who's not healthy, where the development of your football team is, where, what, you know, when you are playing games, the feel of your team at the time. But it takes a lot of time. But I promise you, when you interview for these jobs nowadays, you've already got that. As I said, I had a folder, a binder this big. Now, anymore, it's all PowerPoint. You know, they have it, you know, they have it all down. But I can rest assured that a lot of this stuff was already, because let me tell you something. Mike Vrabel reminds me, I mean, I coached Ron Rivera for 7 years in Chicago. Ron Rivera has been a very successful head coach in this league. Ron Rivera was also cataloging things, even as a player, things that he would do, things that he wouldn't do, things that he wanted to take with him. But at the same time, and I'm sure Mike Vrabel was the same way. And again, you know, Vrabel has come from one of the best, if not the best in the business, in Bill Belichick, the way that he, you know, runs and sets up everything. And then, you know, being in Houston and, you know, and being at Ohio State, there's things you can take from everywhere. But his schedule, I promise you, this thing has been on his mind for quite a while, because I'm just telling you what I went through and what I know, and that's the way it is.
In terms of running a camp, with the experience you've had of running a camp, I know it's important for the coaches to have the same vocabulary and how they talk to the players and how you describe certain plays, positioning, reactions, everything that you do. But when they break away and they go to position groups and they get specific with their position coaches, how much of a hand did you have in what was being taught in those position rooms? Or was it simply you hire your coaches, position coaches, and you stay out of that other than what they're reporting back to you when you have your full coaches meeting?
Good question, Chad. But that's when you vet your coaches before you hire them. You vet your coaches before you hire them. You've got some background on how good of teachers they are, how they teach. But the language, I mean, that like from Belichick to Nick Saban, there's one voice, there's one message, and that has to be consistent if you're going to be consistent. Now, everybody has their own way of teaching, but what they are teaching and how they are teaching it and the type of atmosphere that they are creating, because their atmosphere is a subset of your greater atmosphere, that has to be consistent.
Here's I'm wondering, when you assemble a staff, all right, most of these are Vrabel guys, but a couple of them are guys that the coordinator said, hey, I need... that my perception is, like, the offensive line coach, Carter, now, was connected to LaFleur a little bit from Atlanta. And they need a certain kind of offensive line coach to run the offensive line that goes with this offense. So it's not maybe directly your guy. It's your guy's guy. You ever get burned by that? It's a little harder to have faith in that guy. How do you treat everybody as equals coming in when you don't know that guy the way you know other guys? Talk me through kind of the dynamics.
Okay, the first is how much faith do you have in the guy that's recommending it to you? That's huge. That's number one.
Huge,
the right? other thing is the grapevine in this business, and I'm talking, when I say this business, I'm talking the football business that reaches all levels of football. You are going to know somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody. You're going to vet that down to how they are, if you really don't know them. But it starts with, and you got a great point, Paul, it starts with how much you trust the person that is recommending that person to you, because that's very important, because you can't hire everybody that you know, and you shouldn't hire everybody that you know.
You go back to that guy if you have an issue and say, man, you steered me on this guy and he's not.
Yes. But I never really, because at the end of the day, it's your decision as the head coach, and you've got vetting responsibility also, but as much as everybody is interconnected right now, you don't have very many surprises. You really don't.
Mariota's fit within the offense that you have defended over the years, Coach. How do you describe it?
Once he gets in the ebb and flow of this thing, and once he starts, he gets all the sprockets in the chain, hitting on all the links. Scary. I mean, he's really good at it. Look, I experienced firsthand. you know, what Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur and Greg Olsen offensively took over out there in L.A. the year before, which was, you know, a historically bad offense, you know, with a quarterback that did not have the experience that Marcus, you know, has in this league. And the way they were able to institute the platform of that offense and the success that they had. Now, they brought some new pieces in, especially on the offensive line. And then, of course, as I said, you know, a multidimensional back is huge in this offense. Todd Gurley is as good as there is. I mean, that's why we drafted him, even with an ACL injury, you know, coming out of Georgia in the first round. But all that being said, the job that Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur and Greg Olsen did of implementing this thing. And then I went back and watched their games offensively just to see. And you could see the progression as it started to move. Once this thing gets working here, it's really, really something good to watch. And again, it doesn't come immediately. And that's what, you know, everybody needs to understand. And ever since the inception of this offense, it has never come immediately. But the key to it is that the platform it's introduced on is the correct way, and Matt LaFleur is that guy to do that.
Well, I think that's a great point. I love hearing that because I want to dive a little bit deeper. Everyone looks at it from Mariota's perspective of progressing within the offense, but you mentioned McVay. Watching film last year on him, you could tell he learned what he could and could not call within the framework of his offense with that skill set of offensive playmakers that he had. So it's also on LaFleur to figure that out fairly
absolutely
quickly.
And he will. I mean, Matt LaFleur, I mean, I was out there in LA, you know, when they got out there, and then I've, you know, I still am in contact with a lot of those people, you know, some of those Matt LaFleur was an excellent, excellent hire. He knows how to implement this too, but he will also, and that's 100% true. And you even saw it with, you know, with Shanahan when he had it. You saw it with Kubiak when he was running it. Once they get the platform built and the base built, then they can do a lot of things to tailor make it to what not only their people can do, but, you know, what their quarterback can do. It is, and then you can see it evolve. If you're really grinding and studying film, you can watch it evolve week to week to week to week, because the beauty of this offense is a lot of it is predicated, I mean, when you're trying to defend it, you're not only trying to defend the play, you're defending the formation, you're defending the splits, you're defending personnel group, you're defending splits by the offensive line. There's a lot of subtleties to this offense that as a defensive coach, you have got to sit and grind on, because as I said to begin with, the beauty of this offense is everything looks the same to start with, and there are so many different things that can come off of the same look. So to get tells, what we used to call bird rabbit tells on defense, to be able to see whether birds a pass, rabbits a run. We're really smart. But to be able to get bird rabbit tails and to be able to get, and you don't give those to all of your defensive players because they all can't handle it. But I mean, you know, when, you know, over the years, I mean, Mike Singletary and I would sit and grind bird rabbit tails. Okay. James Laurinaitis, grind bird rabbit tails. Alec Ogletree, grind bird rabbit tails. You get your guy, he can put everybody else in place, okay? But these subtleties, that it's a hard offense to defend when it is hitting on all cylinders, because everything looks the same and there's always deceptions coming off of it. And the keys, there's so many transcontinentals off of this. And by transcontinentals, I mean plays that come from one side of the field to the other. That's where you see a lot of these big strikes. But what you have to be able to do it, you have to have somebody. You don't necessarily have to be able to have somebody that catches, you know, six or seven atomic bombs a game, but they have to be able to clear a safety so that they can't squat on the inside part of the field.
So McVay was getting them out of huddle as fast as possible and getting Goff to the line during his open communication part still, so he could communicate to him from the sideline, which I can see the advantage in, but genius. I imagine if you're coordinating from the other side, you're just not showing anything that reveals anything until under 15 seconds left after that speaker goes out.
No, Sean McVay, I was so impressed with what he did. And I'll tell you something, Paul, it's a lot like what we experienced here all those years I was here when Peyton Manning was in Indianapolis. We had a defensive playbook, you know, and Jim Schwartz is as smart as there is in this business defensively and has been, you know, our defensive playbook set that was pretty extensive. But we had one part of the playbook that was that was Peyton Manning was Indy. Because let me tell you something, if you even twitched one way or the other, he knew it. Okay, and so you had to. We had to sit in a, I mean, every time we played him, you know, Keith Bullock would say it's Indy week, and so you all your other game planning's out the window. You sit in a two shell, you know, seven man front, and then start trying to stem, you know, off of those types of things. And so, to answer your question, Sean McVay knew this offense so well that it's a lot like those guys. And again, we want to talk ball. Let's go clear back to. I grew up in West Texas where Emory Ballard started the wishbone at San Angelo Texas High School and then went to Texas A&M and then went to Texas. Anyway, those guys that were really good at the wishbone, they could line up, and after the first – that's back before they had Polaroids and any of that stuff. But after the first series, they could tell what shade you were in defensively, what you were doing here, and they could counterpunch it. This offense is made to counterpunch. And once they start going through those tablets and they can see what's going on, Sean McVay, I mean, I think he's brilliant because he could sit there and see on the sideline the film that he had studied, grinded film as the play caller. All right, they're this and this, this. Jared, they're too high, strong safeties sitting low, work backside right now. Those types of things before it clicks off.
Before we let you go, Kevin Dodd seems to have given us a lot of reasons to doubt how much he likes football. As a coach, you want a guy who doesn't particularly like football, particularly if it hasn't been a productive guy for you?
Well, I mean, I don't know Kevin Dodd personally. Haven't talked to Kevin Dodd. I know that Kevin Dodd had a great chance. I mean, he's still part of a team with the same people that drafted him, that thought something of him coming out of the draft. He had a brand new coaching staff to start off with. He has had legitimate injuries, but you know, sooner or later, I mean, Kevin Dodd's got to start doing things to help Kevin Dodd, in my opinion.
Going to be somewhere else, we're betting now.
Yeah, not smart to show up. I mean, this is such a fresh start for him, is what I assumed. You know, you had the new coach. He's got the linebacker as the head
almost
coach.
Almost like changing teams.
Almost. And to no-show, I think, Paul, you're onto something when you say the love of the game. I mean, to me, if you want to stay in the league, this is the prime time to show up and put up some numbers in a defense that you should excel in based on your skill set. At least that's the thought process anyway. Coach, what's your schedule like right now leading up to camp this week? You ready?
Are you serious?
What are you doing? You just grinding on more film leading up to Thursday?
Yes, yes, yes. I was up there today, and I'm going back up to watch a little bit, and then I've got to go meet my niece and help her with a resume, and then I'll
all right.
I mean, it's football time. I had already had a full morning with Coach Doug Matthews. That's a lot of ball there.
Oh yeah.
He and I sitting and then coming here and talk ball with you guys. I mean, life's pretty good for Coach Mack right now.
Well, life's good for us having you in studio. Thanks for doing this today. We love doing it.
Guys, you guys are the best. Thank you.
Dave McGinnis has been our guest. We'll have him on again shortly. Talking some ball with Coach Mack here on the Midday 180.